the Sprocket Podcast, episode 224B. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way, much like our guest today, Stephen Such.
Yes. Covering bicycling, trains, transits, and simpler living. And today, a north to south elf ride.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy is badass.
And giving hope where hope is none.
And not like false hope, not like maybe something will happen someday, but like we can make practical change now if we all start.
It's a lot easier to come up with these taglines after the interview.
It really is. Yeah, maybe we should start doing that.
But the guests who usually come into this studio, they like really... So the few times that we've done the intro and outro without... Or we've done the interview without the intro and outro, like the guests are like kind of like, what happened to everything?
What happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, what happened?
I remember interviewing Steph Routh, and she came in, and we didn't play the music, and she was like, what the hell?
Yeah, what happened, guys?
I expect the full podcast experience when I come in here. So consider yourselves all served with the full podcast experience. Anyways, this is our interview with Stephen Such. The Sustainable Joes Project, which you'll hear all the details about, and his voyage, his journey in Rita, the organic transit elf vehicle, electric tadpole trike. So without further ado, let's send you to that interview right now. Thanks again for making the time. I appreciate it. I figured
the pleasure's mine.
We just go over the Rethink tour and your experience with the elf, and then maybe like whatever else comes out of that, and whatever you want to talk about. We're pretty relaxed and easy.
It sounds good, guys.
Fabulous. Well, let's introduce you for the people again. It's Stephen Such.
That's correct.
Which you have a trickily spelled last name, but it's you said a furrier. It was
in Hungarian. Yeah, it's furrier or tailor.
Okay,
and I prefer to say it's a uniquely spelled last name.
Yes, yes. You yourself are not a tailor or a furrier anymore.
No.
Okay.
But I imagine somewhere in the lineage, it would make sense.
There's got to be some tie into sustainability with that. I bet there's a way. Like, does a furrier make hats, or is it something else?
Well, I really don't know the answer to this, but I would assume they probably made like hats and jackets and scarves.
Okay.
I mean, if you think of Eastern Europe in general, like it can be a rather harsh environment, especially during the winter. So.
Yeah. Imagining just like harsh winters. Yeah.
Lots of bear pelts to be had over there.
True.
Bear. Except for that one bear skin rug I had back in university, I don't think I've ever come across another bear pelt.
But. Wait, you had a bear skin rug in university?
I most certainly did not.
Oh, okay. I was going to say you'd be one of the classy ones.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know if you guys are lucky enough to have a bear skin rug, but no, my roommates and I did not have one.
If I had one in university, that bear skin rug would not last at all. And if it did last, I wouldn't want it afterwards anyway.
Yeah.
I would not want that. I don't even know what I'd want to know what my roommates would do.
Yeah.
But on a fun note, gents, it literally just got published on Friday. I graduated from the University of Central Florida, and they did an alumni feature on myself and Sustainable Joes this week.
Oh, nice.
No, congratulations.
So we should talk about this whole tour, because we actually heard of it. I think I'm on the Organic Transit mailing list, and they sent out one of their newsletters. And they were featuring you and your trip that you took in the letter. And so that was kind of how it came about. But we kind of heard about it both like secondhand and kind of after the fact. So I'm glad they've given you some publicity and some featured your story. But tell us a little bit about this tour that you took and how it went down.
Absolutely. So, well, I'll take a step back. First, Sustainable Joes is my passion project, and the name is derived from the mission of Joes, which is to make sustainability easy for all everyday Joes of the world.
Yeah.
So I lived off the electrical grid for a year with over 50% of the global population living in an urban center. The question is, you know, how do we increase the accessibility to sustainable solutions for the everyday Joe? As that year was coming to an end, my dream was and still is to travel around the world highlighting what I call sustainable difference makers. So individuals, communities, organizations, and businesses engaged in the space of sustainability and moving our world forward in that direction. So ironically, as we talked about UCF a few minutes ago, a fellow classmate of mine, when I kind of put that dream out there, he works for No Commission Annuity. And he's like, have you ever heard of this thing called an ELF? I'm like, no. He's like, check your email. So I open up my email. I'm like, well, this thing looks ridiculous. He's like, yeah, exactly, right? and he's like, were you serious about, you know, wanting to travel around and, you know, highlight sustainable difference makers? Because, I mean, you know, the gentleman at No Commission Annuity, like, they have families, they have grandkids, and you know, they're like, we believe our world needs to move in a more sustainable direction. I was like, you know, heck yes, I was serious about this. He's like, well, I talked to the partners and we'll buy the ELF, we'll own the ELF. You put sponsored by us and, you know, you can use it as long as you want. So that's how leg one of the Rethink Tour started.
That's awesome. I love how if you just put yourself out there, you say, I want to do a thing, more often than not, the universe conspires to help you with that if it's a good thing. So you've got, the ELF is, it's a trike, right? And it's been just long enough. I think I rode one about a year ago. But it's an enclosed trike on kind of a recumbent frame with a windshield and electric assist and cargo capacity.
Yeah, I call it a semi-recumbent, solar and pedal powered trike. A lot of the schools I spoke at, you know, the kids are like, oh, it's the car bike thingy.
yeah.
But it has a 500 watt motor, and it has a payload capacity of 350 pounds. Now, you know, I also had a broken rear axle and I was completely self-contained and my self-contained weight was under 400 pounds. So, you know, there's still very much ironing things out, but it gets people rethinking. And that was the whole idea of the tour, right? How do we rethink everything to move our world in a more sustainable direction for future generations?
That's your hashtag.
Yeah, the hashtag is Rethink. And the whole tour was Rethink because as I went down from mayors to congressmen to senators, you know, to school children to corporate executives, I asked everybody, why do you want sustainable change? And the hope and what I actually can prove, and I'm going to be working on a documentary here shortly, was that regardless of race or religion or geographic location, everybody wants sustainable change for the same reason, and that is for future generations. So how do we make sustainability easy enough? How do we make it bite-sized enough to truly, you know, enact some quantifiable and tangible sustainable change?
That seems like a fascinating survey, and you had plenty of time and space to do that in. Right?
Traveling 14 miles an hour, I had plenty of time.
Yeah. You started in Toronto, is that correct?
I actually, on the morning of June the 14th, I left Simcoe, Ontario, and I went to London, Ontario.
Ah.
Because London is where I lived off the electrical grid for a year. My roommate actually participated with me for the first 3 months, and he went back to school. And it was a wild experience. Anyway, so I wanted to technically leave from London. So, yeah, I went from London, Ontario, went all the way up through Toronto, up to Ottawa, Montreal, down through Burlington, Vermont, New Hampshire. Newburyport, Massachusetts was as far east as I got. So I was like 30 miles away from Maine. Then I went through Mass, Connecticut, into New York. I was at the People's Climate March in New York City on September the 21st. Then down through, you know, Jersey, Pennsylvania, all the way down the Eastern Seaboard until finally arriving in Key West on December the 20th. And we were welcomed by the mayor of Key West, some esteemed delegates of the Conch Republic. I don't know if you knew that Key West is technically a part of the Conch Republic.
Is it?
I had no idea. I don't even know what the Conch Republic is at this point.
Well, so Key West, gentlemen, if you've never been there, have you ever been there?
I have been there.
Oh, you have?
I've walked end to end on Key West a couple times.
Did you ever have some conch fritters?
No. Oh my gosh, that sounds delicious. Oh
my man. Conch fritters are what Key West is. Conch fritters and key lime pie. I don't like those are pretty much the two things Key West is known for, as well as the Alitosha. That ship that sank.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, it's called the Conch Republic, I believe, due to the conch fritters conking. So like killing conch and getting the conch meat is no longer legal. But yeah, they called themselves the Conch Republic, and they actually formally seceded from the Union in 1982.
Really?
No shit.
Yeah. So I was welcomed at the tip of Key West, so the southernmost point of the continental United States, with a Captain Eddie. He was a conch blower. So like I have a picture. If you look at the Sustainable Joe's Instagram page or on the Facebook page, where there's a guy blowing a conch. I have video of that too.
Are we talking about like as a musical instrument?
Traditionally it was a method that natives could communicate with one another on the different keys.
Okay.
So they like they chop off the top of the conch, and then they take out apparently some bit, and then they blow into it. I tried it, yeah. And I failed miserably.
Okay.
Like he made this like beautiful, you know, in like the Little Mermaid when somebody blows into the conch and it's like, dun, da, da, da.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sounded more like a.
So kind of like when I tried to play trombone, I had a similar experience, I think.
I imagine it would be somewhat similar to that. Yes.
All right. I'm going to make a note of that because I want to find later, conch sound. Like this is something I'm not familiar with, and I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in hearing what it sounds like to blow a conch shell. So
yeah, insert conch sound now.
All right, there we go. It's coming in. So that it reminds me a little bit of Cascadia. The idea that there
that,
are certain
like,
people in the Northwest that would like to secede as well.
Bioregion that will.
Yeah. I don't think
there's
it's
a number of people that believe we will succeed from the Union as well.
Someday, yeah. And it's not so much about whether or not you can eat shellfish, but I'm sure that would play into it at some point.
It might be whether
we'll
you
see
can
how
chop down
time unfolds, duck right?
fur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll keep your eyes on that news. That'll be another Google search alert to put in. So had you done a bicycle tour before?
No.
Okay. So this is your first.
I hadn't been I had a beautiful hardtailed like old it's probably a mid 2000. I don't know the year my bike was actually made, but it got stolen about 2 years ago.
Oh dude.
And yeah, and then I was living in downtown London and I just had a longboard. So I had my car and a longboard, but I rarely drove because one, I try to maximize the utility of any resource. But you have to have one to get back to my hometown.
Okay.
Cause literally zero public transit goes there.
Yeah.
So I hadn't been on a bike for probably about 18 months when I decided to go on the Rethink Tour.
Okay. Longboarding is one of the things. We got our friend Corey here who rides his longboard around almost everywhere.
It's great.
Yeah, it's one of those things that if you don't think about it, it is a fantastically sustainable way to transport yourself. But most people don't think of any sort of board skating or what have you for getting around town. It's just a thing that kind of like bicycling has been seen as something that is largely recreational when it has a lot of utilitarian purpose.
Does it ever? And you know what? That was one thing that was really interesting to see moving down the East Coast is the accessibility to cycling in different communities, whether they were, you know, both large and small. I believe like New York's increased by 400% in the last like 6 years. Meanwhile, bike related accidents have stayed the same. So I think there is a great power in numbers.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. In London, were there laws that provided for you on a longboard that protected your right to do so, or no?
No, but I mean, like London, Ontario only has like 330,000 people. So,
okay.
Yeah, like I mean, I would longboard. My max on most days is maybe like 6 blocks one direction.
Okay. Well,
so it was
not
never
too bad.
No, it was very. Again, like from where I lived to where I had to like go to work or whatnot, it was very convenient.
Yeah,
and I think that's the key, right? How do you make it convenient for somebody to want to choose a more sustainable method of transit?
Yeah, yeah, that is the interesting thing about the way that we're set up is that many of us have jobs that are ridiculously far from where we live or from where we do other things in town. And so, yeah, it, promoting sustainability, that's probably one of your biggest roadblocks, right?
Yeah, well, the integration. I was invited out to the EPA on my way down. And, you know, that was I asked them, I said, well, guys, what do you think about EVs, like electric vehicles? And they're like, well, Stephen, you know, even if we get, you know, replace every single internal combustion engine with an EV, we still have a lot of cars on okay. the road.
Yeah.
Which means we still have a lot of congestion, right? Human Powered Delray is a organization out of Delray Beach, Florida. And I met with the city's like green implementation board. And it was on the day that Human Powered Delray was presenting. And they were talking about how, you know, in a lot of cities, Delray Beach, Florida being one of them, like bike lanes will get you to the most squirrely or hairy intersection in the town. And then it's like, okay, good luck getting through here. And then we'll have a bike lane, you know, like a couple hundred yards after the intersection.
That seems like a pretty common experience.
I was going to say,
yeah,
absolutely.
This sounds like East Portland to me.
Right.
Yeah. And it's everywhere. I mean, as somebody who's, you know, gone almost 5,000 miles in the past 7 months, like it is everywhere.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, you know, you meet some, I met some hardcore cyclists, on my way down, and, you know, they'll bring their kids, and it's amazing to see the reaction of a common motorist on the road. It's like, oh, honey, there's a cyclist and a child. Let's watch out. As opposed to, oh, there's just an adult on a bike. Like, oh, who, like, it doesn't really matter how close you get to that adult on the bike. I'm like, it's still a heartbeat, guys.
Yeah,
it is funny. Like, at what age are you? Is your life like somehow less valuable?
Yeah, like, on a bike.
You're right.
Like, you're inconveniencing me.
Oh, it's okay if these kids inconvenience me, but like once you reach the age of I don't know, like say 16, now you're pissing me off that you're in the road.
There's like an age
exactly.
of accountability for whether or not you're allowed to be there. Like a child is allowed to make that mistake, but an adult is yeah. not allowed to make the mistake of riding a bicycle in the
right,
street.
Right.
But yeah. the thing is, even if you're in a bike lane, like, and bike lanes are always the worst maintained lanes on the road. Like, why is it that all the debris on the road is in the bike lane when the cyclists have the weakest tires?
Right, right. Yeah, I deal with that where I work. It's kind of on the edge of town, and it's not a place that sees a lot of road maintenance. And I swear, like, it snowed last February, and the gravel and stuff that they put down to help cars get traction
it
on the road
rolls is right into
still
the-
there like a year later. So,
oh, yeah, you know it.
I did a tweet about that. Did you? Well, first of all, I'm curious, Stephen, are you like kind of a fighter? Like, do you enjoy the challenge of asserting your place on the road when you don't have a bike lane, or was that kind of uncomfortable and unpleasant for you?
No, I'll give you a little history. I used to lead small group adventure tours across the US and Canada. So like one summer I drove like almost 40,000 miles with passengers from all over the world.
Ah.
When I'm on the road, I'm a very aware individual, whether I'm on, you know, my regular bike, if I'm in an Elf, or just on my longboard. I try to be mindful of everybody who's on the road, as I believe, you know, do unto others as you'd like others to do unto you. I believe everybody should be mindful and respectful of all the other lives that are on the road.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just want everybody to get where they're going safely. I have found for me that the best approach to do that is to be hyper aware of everybody who's around me. Because and an Elf is so much different than any other vehicle I've ever been in.
Yeah. And let's describe, like, how wide is it for people who
48 inches wide by 108 long. So that's 4 feet by 9 feet.
Okay. It's pretty hefty.
That it's the size of a smart car, just not as wide.
Okay. Gotcha.
Meanwhile, because it's classified as a low power assisted bicycle by federal standards, it cannot go in excess of 20 miles an hour on its own propulsion system.
Uh-huh.
Now, they're going to tell you that you can get it going faster than 20 miles an hour, but you guys know how much energy, like the increased amount of physical energy that it takes to move any cyclist. I believe it's over, 15 miles an hour?
Yeah.
It starts almost like the multiplier almost starts doubling.
Yep.
Now imagine that with a 4 foot like wall in front of you.
Right.
Because like that's what this windshield is. So it's the fastest I got Rita. I called my elf Rethink Rita.
Nice.
Nice.
I love alliteration.
Rethink Rita. That's good.
Yeah, you better believe it. She was curvy. She had some hips, boys.
Hey-o.
Yeah. So the fastest I had her going was down a hill in New Hampshire.
Oh, yeah.
And we got up to 58.7 kilometers an hour, which I believe is just – it's like 37 miles an hour.
Okay.
That was fast.
Yeah.
I was very happy. I was out in the middle of nowhere, and I had a substantial run out.
Yeah, I would imagine. How did it handle at speeds like that? Because it's a trike, so you've just got one front wheel. Did you wobble? Were you worried?
No. I had two front wheels.
Oh, that's right. So, the wheels are in front, so it's got one wheel in back.
Yeah. The only thing, the wheels, they're fixed, right? Mm-hmm. All the wheels are fixed. And you're on an aluminum frame that has no suspension. Mm-hmm. So the new ones, they have dampeners, the new elves, but it's still not like a suspension. It's just like if you imagine little take a lime, squeeze it, and put them at the base of your kingpins.
There
that's
you go.
Basically that's what the dampeners are like.
Okay.
But instead of limes, they're rubber.
Nice.
I hope that visual worked. Anyways, so from a stability standpoint, if you're going down a hill, it's pretty good. Wind, you're going to run into a bigger issue. But that time when I was going down the hill, the only thing I was thinking is, wow, as long as I don't have to turn. Yeah, I mean, as you'd think on a regular bike too, right? As long as I don't have to turn or brake really hard, I'm just going to roll this one out.
Okay, yeah, exactly. You take advantage of the speed that you've got.
Yeah.
Nice.
And not to mention, especially for me, because I would try to maximize the utility of all energy inputs, right? So whether it was the power-assisted electrical motor or my legs.
Okay.
Because I was traveling distance as well as kind of some sizable weight.
Right. And maybe the common misconception with an electric assist is that it's going to make it way easier for you. And I'm sure it does take the burden off, but I would imagine you also got a full workout every day.
Oh, yeah. You can go per battery with no assist, if you just wanted to pin it and you were going on flat ground with no wind, you're going to be right around 15 miles an hour.
Okay.
Or 15 miles. I would go on my three batteries. They were the 10 amp hour batteries. I would plan each day to be about 60 miles, give or take.
There you go. That's about what I do when I go out.
Yeah. So it pretty much came down to, anywhere from 60 to my biggest day was 128 miles.
That's intense. Where was that?
That was, I did 110 from Montreal to Burlington, Vermont. I think the 128 was from Columbus to Charleston.
Nice.
I had a couple big days because as it started getting colder, I kind of had to express the movement south.
Yeah.
Because trying to balance in, again, it was kind of a different type of cycling tour because I wanted to engage as many people as possible. And that's why we chose the elf, right? Because on the road, wherever I stopped, people were coming up to me and what is this thing? And from that conversation, we could transition them into talking about stewardship and sustainability, which is something that a lot of people want to talk about, but are uncomfortable talking about because quite frankly, they're afraid of what their kid's future looks like.
Yeah, it's a bleak prospect when you think about what the potential for the future is. What are the roadblocks that you saw as you were talking to people about making changes to a more sustainable lifestyle?
The biggest is that it's not available. It's not easy enough. People have so many things on their plate, right? Whether you got three kids, you got a mortgage, you got a car payment, you got your insurance, that they're literally just trying to go day by day. What am I having for dinner? Hell, what did I have for breakfast? So, their systems are already set up and the majority of people are going to take the path of least resistance. However, the majority of people also want to move our world in a more sustainable direction. So, you know, as I look forward to what a possible leg two will look like and what partners will be involved for that, a lot of it comes back to, well, how do we make sustainability easy? How do we make it bite-sized for the everyday Joe? So instead of, you know, having people in a state of fear, we can motivate them and we can give them hope. People want to hope.
Yeah. And it seems, what do you think, Aaron?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was, as a question of motivation, it's so much easier to motivate people out of a sense of hope than out of a sense of fear. You know, from fear, like, we tend to cripple ourselves. I mean, you're talking about people don't like to talk about sustainability. I think one of the things is we see it as such a huge, ungraspable or unsolvable thing.
Unattainable, absolutely.
And yeah, and it overwhelms us. And so it's so much easier to just kind of throw up your hands and go like, well, you know, I can't solve it. I got to eat and McDonald's is right here. And that's all I can afford anyway. You know, and I like that idea of like, how do you make sort of the norm be the sustainable thing? Or how do you make the sustainable thing be more the norm? How do you make it easy so that it becomes the norm?
Thanks, my man. That's the whole aim. And it's, I believe that it's possible because back to the idea of highlighting sustainable difference makers, there are people out there working on this. So how do we just make their products or services more accessible to the everyday Joe? And then hopefully we can start to integrate these solutions and move our world in a more sustainable direction. Everything from cycling to where we get our food from.
Yeah. And food is a huge one because, I don't know, like, especially a lot of the things, a lot of the literature that people, distribute about like eating meat, for example, cows are enormously energy intensive. And so, in order to have beef, you have the equivalent of, you know, like five or six dinners or something like that per pound of meat. Just an energy expended to raise this cow. And I like a good cow as much as the next guy, but yeah, it seems like the sort of thing that if we can move yourself away from a meat based diet to more of a plant based diet, that's a change that's going to help the world out immensely.
Absolutely, I'm a big fan of bison, and I believe you guys got a lot of bison out there.
Yeah, we don't have any right here, but yeah, that's one of the things where bison are actually being raised. Either bison or bison beef hybrids are being raised on the market as an alternative.
To touch on what you had just said prior, I believe, yeah, the number is like 18%. 18% of all like global greenhouse gas emissions come from the commercial production of meat.
Okay, yeah.
I believe that's what the number is. Don't, again, we can verify that.
Yeah, we're speculating here.
Everything from production to transportation, like all the externalities involved.
Right, right. And it's kind of ugly too. I don't know, Aaron, if you've seen this, but there was a picture going around on the internet about like what it looks like when a feedlot is viewed from the air.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was close to either a butchering plant or a rendering facility or something like
just
that.
Someone using like Google Earth or Google Maps to zoom in on.
Yeah, and the aerial view of this place after the beef had been slaughtered and processed. There's like a pond of runoff, and it's just like this big red coagulated mass.
Wow.
Which is really gross. Wow. So.
Coagulated is just kind of a gross word in it.
It really is. I try and stay away from that when I can.
They also, I don't know if you've watched Years of Living Dangerously, that was, have you guys seen that?
No.
It's Showtime's, they dubbed it their groundbreaking series on climate change. It was like one of the co-producers was James Cameron, Matt Damon was in it, Jessica Alba, Harrison Ford was in it. But one of the, I believe one of the episodes, it was a documentary series. They showed this one lady who went to a lot of commercially raised meat areas. And from an aerial perspective, you could see ponds of fecal matter because they couldn't just distribute them evenly.
Oh,
and it was just disturbing. And so then, I mean, then there's detrimental effects to your local ecosystems because the manure has to go somewhere.
Right.
So some of these farmers are spraying it onto fields, but then you have runoffs into creeks and rivers.
Yeah. And I think I might have been reading about the areas near some of these facilities where like the neighbors have health issues that are related to the amount of crap that's coming out of the cow and being dealt with in some way or another. Similar as it might be like if you live next to a processing facility or something like that. Yeah. And so I would imagine a lot of what you're covering is the fact that like we have this interconnected life and we've been trying to push the negative effects of our lifestyles out into the places where we're not going to notice them. But that's becoming harder and harder to do.
Well, and as the world continues to, the population continues to grow as well, right? We're forcing animals out of their native habitats. But at the same time, our climate is changing.
Right.
Like, and I try to actually stay away from the whole idea of like climate change or are we going to talk about parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere? Because quite frankly, all I really want people to focus on is what's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Like I would ask somebody, do you like breathing in what comes out of a car's exhaust pipe? No. Do you think there'll be detrimental effects for your children? Yes. Why do you still drive an internal combustion engine? Like, do you need those 8 cylinders to transport you and your daughter in a big truck and you're not a farmer?
Yeah, totally. Those are the questions that you have to ask. I've actually been thinking, it's funny because you've been talking about electric vehicles and what it takes to get those on the road. I would say that's a much better choice than a gasoline-driven car. But at the same time, like when you're using electronics, when I'm charging my iPhone, when, anytime we turn on the lights, we're burning, here in Oregon, we're burning mostly coal out in eastern Oregon in the town of Boardman. So, again, it's the kind of the pushing of effects from one place to another. So it's, I think we're probably using energy more efficiently, but we still have to burn that coal. So eventually, I'm curious, just, you mentioned earlier the living off the grid. To tell me a little bit more about that.
That was a dark winter, my friend.
I would imagine.
and last year in Canada, in London, it was cold and we got so much snow. I mean, they've gotten a lot of snow again this year in the entire Northeast, but we got a lot of snow.
Wow.
In all reality, just kind of like this cycling tour, I'm a pretty, like if I say I'm going to do something, I do it. So like that entire year, I kept all my garbage in my house as well. I created one bag of garbage.
Oh yeah.
And now that being said, I did recycle, right? So like if I had black beans, like, and they were in a can, I would recycle that can. But as far as just being mindful of what you produce with regards to garbage, like if I went, when I went to the market, I would just bring my own bags. There you go. Now all of a sudden you have no bags. Like what is it that we buy? Like if you eliminate processed foods from your life, it's amazing how much packaging all of a sudden is diminished. I also, gentlemen, ate a lot of peanut butter and honey sandwiches.
There you go.
And then kale, I will tell you what, anybody who likes kale, you can make a delicious salad that's kale, a little bit of lemon, some freshly cracked salt, and some olive oil.
That's some good stuff.
And it's easy to grow.
True.
Kale can grow just about anywhere.
I actually grew kale in my window in London. I also had a southern exposure. But yeah, I grew kale throughout the winter. Now, I didn't grow a lot of it. And I'd really like to try to do a little more like hydroponic growing, like indoor growing.
Yeah.
Especially during the winter. But I've seen like I stayed at an Earthship in southwestern Ontario. This thing maintains constant temperature of 72 degrees Fahrenheit, which is like 22 degrees Celsius all year round. No furnace, no air conditioner, and it's literally completely off the grid. They have a gray water filtration greenhouse inside the house.
Whoa.
They had a 9.5 foot tall tomato. I call it a tomato tree.
Right.
Because it's not really like this is no longer a tomato plant. This thing was enormous. And this gentleman was in the beginning of June.
Yeah. And so for anybody who's not familiar with an Earthship, it's basically it's a dwelling that's been partially dug into the earth, right?
Yeah. It's made out of compressed earth. So basically you have tires that are packed with earth and it operates off of three different principles: thermal mass, ventilation and insulation.
So you got thermal mass, which is kind of like an insulating blanket, or the insulation is another thing as well.
Well, the thermal mass allows for insulation. Now they do have some external types of insulation, but what thermal mass does is In the case of an Earthship, or in the case of the Earthship I visited in southwestern Ontario, the entire southern exposure was windows. So during the winter, the sun, it would allow the sun to come in, which would heat up the earth that's inside. It would heat up the thermal mass. And then as the air moves through during the evening hours, like that, the earth stays warm, kind of like a bathtub.
Yeah. Right?
How much cold water do you have to put into a bathtub of hot water to make that water cold?
It would take quite a bit, right?
Exactly. Same with when people live in coastal environments. Like, it's always cooler in Miami Beach than it is in downtown Miami because the ocean, the water stays cool. And so then when the air moves by, it's kind of like the same principle, the same ideology.
Yeah, the ocean is a wonderful temperature regulator. It's always, yeah, you have like a very kind of mild temperature and climate.
But that thermal mass of the water, like the principle is the same. So you just do the same thing, but for a house. And they also had a rainwater capturing roof, and they had a 15,000 liter tank.
That's intense.
Yeah. So, I mean, Craig and Connie Cook, they're good regardless of what happens. They had a wind turbine that they didn't even put up. It was 2.3 kilowatts, and they had a 1.3 kilowatt solar array out back.
Okay. So they didn't need the turbine because the solar was already doing so well for them?
Well, and the fact that literally their energy inputs, their energy needs, rather, are so minimal.
Okay, like, yeah. Yeah, it seems like a great idea because then, like, I don't know, we've been building houses a certain way for a while, and it's kind of popular to do so. And generally, the contractors will use what we're used to seeing when we see houses. But there are many other ways that could make we would certainly spend far less on heating.
Well, and back to the idea of rethinking things, right?
Yeah.
And that's the whole, again, the idea of the tour. But society, as we're set up right now, we already have a picture on the canvas, right? It's not like we can just get a brand new blank canvas and start painting the sustainable picture. We have to paint over kind of what's there without disrupting the system too much. So how do we work with the system to change it? How do we rethink everything to move our world in a more sustainable direction?
Yeah.
So that's what all the projects have been about, whether it's highlighting a community, an organization, or a business, whatever the sustainable difference maker is, or me living off the grid, or going and staying with Craig and Connie Cook and their Earthship. Like, it's how do they, can we get people curious enough? Can we make it easy enough? And that's the hope. I mean, I'm sure you guys have a lot of people out in the Northwest who are doing some pretty cool things, but, you know, are those solutions viable for the urban dweller when over half of the global population lives in an urban center?
Right. Yeah. And so, like, there are many, many different paths that this can take, I suppose. Like, the rethinking will be different for each context.
And I believe it'll need to be, you know, like, a sustainable solution in Miami Beach will be different than in, you know, Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll be different, but the same.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious what resistance have you encountered on your project? Because like you said, people want change, but people fear change also. What is it that you see that makes it most difficult for people to make better choices about sustainability?
Well, it's not easy enough yet, and it's not cool enough either. So and that's basically it. People want to be a part of things that are cool, and it's easier to go with the flow. Other than that, gents, I truly believe that it's possible if we can just make it easy enough, if we can show them the impact, because the idea with the rethink reasons was to tap into the intrinsic motivators, right?
Right. Like we were talking about earlier. Yeah,
exactly. So instead of, you know, but if we can tap into an intrinsic motivator and then also a economic motivator, I think that'll be really beneficial. Elon Musk at the Detroit Auto Show had said that the economic force function has been reduced with the decrease in gas prices. Therefore, you know, somebody would be less inclined to buy an EV, even though if you dive into the numbers further, it still makes financial sense. What I would like to do is dial up the social force function. So if we can get everybody talking about it, you know, thought precedes action. And then ideally we'll get some sustainable action.
Yeah. Yeah. I know in America you get the, or I guess the United States of America, you get the, the tax benefits for buying an electric vehicle,
but not a bike.
Or, I'm not sure how that you said the Elf is technically defined as a bicycle, and so
a low power assisted bike.
You probably don't get your tax write off on that either. But yeah, the economic thing. I was just thinking about gasoline. Like for a long time, it was like, you know, what was it down in when you and I were in San Luis Obispo, Aaron? We were at the train station. There was that. Take the train because the gas costs an arm and a leg and whatnot.
Right.
And that is, like you're saying, Stephen, this is not a thing that is as much like gas is going down because there's more domestic oil available these days. And so.
But there's more domestic. I'm going to chime in here. There's more domestic oil available because we need to keep people consuming oil. We have not only do we have an infrastructure that's oil dependent, but we have a social structure that's oil dependent, or at least thinks of oil as the default. And the reason why things like fracking exists is because we're basically scraping the bottom of the barrel, but we still want to make whatever the status quo is still the status quo, rather than rethink.
I see what solutions. You did there, and I like it.
Thank you.
Well, you know, whenever you have a finite natural resource from a pure supply and demand standpoint, you know, you can monetize that, right? Like if you keep the supply down, the price will be up. If you increase the supply, the price will go down. But either way, it's something that can easily participate in the economic system and kind of not change the status quo too much. Again, when I talk about working with the system to change it, like how do we allow the continuation of profitability while not having so many side effects for future generations? And yeah, I believe you're 100% right when you say that our society right now sees oil, sees coal, sees dirty fuel as the fallback, the default. And it just reminds me of that picture. Have you ever seen that picture? Well, what if we, you know, were powered completely off of renewables and we didn't produce any CO2 into the atmosphere? Like, well, what would we leave future generations? A beautiful, beautiful planet. Didn't pollute our waters, didn't pollute our air. I believe we have the intellectual capacity. We just have to get enough motivation, enough belief, and enough, like we touched on earlier, hope.
Yeah. So you've got another leg of the tour planned, you said? You're going to take the Elf out for another bout?
It won't be in the Elf. My body took way too much. it was a bumpy ride, my friends, both figuratively and literally.
Okay.
I would, not to mention, like from a planning like standpoint, like I became far more of a bike mechanic than I ever thought I would be.
Yeah.
But I spent so much time on the road that I couldn't produce as much video as I'd like to produce, which deals with, you know, integration. So I'd like to still do some bike tours in locations, because I think it's a great way to get people out to nature. And you know, we have like what do they call it, NDD, nature deficit disorder. So how do we get people to care about nature who never experience it? And I think getting on a bike just provides that freedom. I mean, you know what that freedom feels like when you got the wind going by your ears. Like that is so, it's rhythmic, it's almost like you just can lose yourself in that. That's actually something I missed on the Elf. I thought, like, I remember when I would get out on my bike and I would love that. I wouldn't think about anything else. But you don't have that same sound going by the ear. You actually have like this little hum of an electric motor and some rattling from the actual shell of the Elf. I'm sure when you rode the Elf, you heard the rattling.
Yeah, no, I noticed that. I think we did a kind of a special coverage episode where I was in the Elf and recording myself and doing some of that test riding, and we caught some audio from it. So yeah, anybody who's listening to this could go back about a year back and listen to me riding in the Elf. But yeah, it's got a lot of running noise. It's a great product and a great solution, but it does make a lot of noise as you ride.
Yeah, it gets people rethinking, right? And there's so many products. And this is what excites me as somebody who's just focused on stewardship and sustainability, right? Like it has gotten people rethinking, which is a beautiful thing. And now you see like how many more electric bikes are on the market in the last 18 months than there were when the Elf ran their first Kickstarter.
Yeah, I know there's a few out here. I met some owners when I was at that test ride event, and there's a lady who was in her 70s, I think, or maybe 80s, and that was her grocery getter. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Another when you say grocery getter, another quote that I remember very clearly. I believe the gentleman's name was James Shard from Human Powered Del Rey, and he said, "You know, Stephen, it's a shame that people in our community have to get in a car to get a loaf of bread."
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to just walking somewhere, you know.
Well, walking or cycling. I remember when I was invited out to the EPA. Like, that was one of the big things they talked about is social capital. Like, how do you build social capital? How do you get your communities, like, caring about, like, your populace, your citizens, caring about other citizens? And it's only by interacting. And you interact when you walk. You interact when you cycle. I remember this gentleman named – I stayed with Dave and Carmen in Burlington, Vermont. And Dave was like, "Stephen, the cutoff – like, he has his doctorate and his – his company deals in bioassays. I didn't even know what a bioassay was until I was in Burlington, Vermont.
I don't think we do either.
Yeah, it's basically a way of, I believe, measuring like microbes or like what's in a petri dish.
Oh, but fascinating.
Incredibly smart man. They taught me. I was broken down there. That was the day I rode from Montreal to Burlington, actually on a broken rear axle. And I was stuck there at Dave and Carmen's over Labor Day weekend. I can't say enough nice things. Like,
that's great.
No, I mean, a holiday weekend, and I remember coming down and I was like, "Guys, I'm going to have to be in Burlington for another couple of days. If you want me to go find another place, I can do that." And I was like, "Dave, you know, tell Carmen that night because I don't want to impose. It's your holiday, right?"
Right.
I came downstairs the next morning. And Carmen's like, "Stephen, Dave told me what you said last night." She's like, "He already got down one of his favorite bikes. You know, we view you like family. Like, we love what you're doing. And yeah, we've had so much fun having you here for the last 2 days. You know, you stay as long as you need to fix, you know, Rita. If you need a car to go get anything else from one of the stores that are a little further, here's one of our car keys." Like,
so nice of them.
Yeah. Like, I mean, so many good people. Like, people want this and they want to figure it out. They also taught me how to tango.
Nice.
Back to building social capital. And, you know, Dave said that apparently the miles per hour is 15. Anything in excess of 15 miles an hour and your peripheral vision starts to blur. So you literally can't appreciate as much. Oh. So when you get on a bike, when you slow down, when you get on a longboard, when you slow down, when you start walking and slow down a little bit, you're certainly more inclined to smile at somebody or say hi, as opposed to being in your bubble of a car, drive into your garage, close your garage, and then you're in your bubble of a house.
Absolutely.
Quite literally, your world gets wider.
Right.
Nice. I like that.
Well, we should probably let you go. We've got the website is Sustainable Joe's, and you've got leg two coming up. When do you start?
We're still ironing that out.
Okay.
Right now, I'm looking for as many partners as possible.
Okay.
Because one thing I really do want is to do, like when I talk about having cycle tours, I made some friends out at the EPA, so I'd like to, you know, get the EPA involved too. So imagine if we had like a cycle day in a community and then we go out to this wildlife refuge and, you know, an agent from the EPA out there who talks to us about the environmental conditions there, why this is an important area to steward. I think that might reduce the NDD, the nature deficit disorder that many people experience, and maybe just get them caring more. So, gents, if you have any ideas, let me know. And thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. The Environmental Protection Agency sponsors a bike tour to a wildlife refuge. That's a good idea.
Well, but again, it's more just bringing people together and getting people to care and build that social capital instead of it being so much, you know, how can I make life better for me? Like, what about like every child, I believe, deserves a good future.
Right.
And right now I'm slightly concerned about how sustainable that future is going to be for future generations.
Yeah. Well, if you should find yourself in Portland in June, there's a big bicycle fun festival called Pedalpalooza that I think you'd get a kick out of. So if you're ever here in town, we can help you find like places to stay and whatnot, and get you out on some of these fun rides. It's what you're talking about with connecting people and making it about more than just you.
Exactly, because I believe there's a quote by Martin Luther King Jr. and he said, "We may have come in on different boats, but we're all in the same boat now."
Aha. Nice. That is in fact the case.
Gents, thanks so much.
Stephen Such, thank you very much again. SustainableJoes.com, and we'll look forward to seeing what you come up with next.
Hey, thanks. And if you have any ideas, let me know. Also, we have the Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, and everything is Sustainable Joes. Okay?
Beautiful.
If anybody wants to be a part of Leg 2, that's pretty much it.
Okay.
This is more or less officially a call out. If anybody wants to help participate in the documentary, all I'll be doing for the next couple months is working on the documentary to, again, show that regardless of race, religion, or geographic location, like, people want to leave the world a better place for future generations.
Seriously, yeah.
How do we do it? So let's figure it out, and let's work together to figure it out.
Yeah. We also want to mention that Aaron chose Canada Dry as his beverage for the interview.
Nice!
Today, so,
I love a nice ginger ale.
In your honor.
The Canada Dry, nevertheless. hey, gents, here's one question I will say.
Yeah.
Do you believe our world's moving in a sustainable direction?
No.
I mean,
not right now.
I can't say yes. I cannot say yes to that question, unfortunately. I think at the very best, we're stagnant.
Now, here's my next question. Do you wish that we were?
Indeed.
Hells yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. And you know what? You, even though you guys clearly cycle more in transportation, like with 93% of Americans getting to work in a single person vehicle every day, like, that's kind of ridiculous when it comes to gluttony and fuel. But so, I mean, transporting yourself via bicycle does make an enormous difference. But what I will say is that you are like everybody else in that you want to hope. And so when you look at people, regardless of whether they're in a, you know, a big F-250 diesel and spewing that black smoke everywhere.
Right.
You know, if you talk to that guy about his kid, all of a sudden it becomes far more real.
Seriously. Yeah.
And it's not, you're not talking about his action. You're talking about just about in general. Gents, thanks so much. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, Stephen, thank you very much.
We'll be in touch, eh?
Wasn't that a great interview?
That was a wonderful interview.
That was fun.
No. Yeah, it was really thought provoking. I really loved sort of his ending. Like, do you think we're moving in sustainable way? Oh, well, no, I'm not spoiling anything. What am I saying? Do you think we're moving in sustainable ways? No. Do you want to? Yes.
Right.
And
so
how, like, that's the opinion shared by everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like. Well, is it like the emperor with no clothes? Like, nobody wants to say anything because they're afraid, like, of looking dumb. And then suddenly a little kid says, hey, the emperor is not wearing any clothes. And everybody else is like, oh, yeah, they're right.
yeah, maybe something to that effect. Like, I mean, he talked about how it's just uncomfortable to talk about and people don't know how to talk about it.
Yeah. And there's like, I don't know, there's kind of a... like mass delusion or mass hypnosis or something like this, that we're like, you know, we don't have lifestyles that are actively sustainable or making good choices with a lot of the things that we do in life. But it's obvious that if we start thinking about it and talking about it, we're not that far away from making those changes.
Right. Yeah. This is something we didn't get to talk about, but like sort of, there's kind of two hopes. There's the like do nothing hope where you're just, maybe someone will fix this, or, you know, maybe it'll sort itself out.
Right. Maybe we'll just like wait for a minute. Everything will be okay.
Yeah. But when it comes to climate change, when it comes to sustainability, when it comes to our generations after us inheriting what we've already done and we've inherited what others have done,
right.
You know,
right.
To the earth, to society, and whatever. That's not the hope that can work.
Yeah. You know? So that's why I would do this.
There you go.
Do you live in a shithole? Do you want to live in a shithole? Do you want your children to live in a shithole? Of course you don't. If you don't have kids, do you want your friends' kids to live in a shithole? No. So pick one thing, just one thing.
It doesn't have to be huge.
No. That you could change about your lifestyle to make it just a little bit more sustainable for future generations, for your own future.
Maybe collect those plastic bags and actually take them into the Fred Meyer recyclery.
Right. You know, like, for example, I gave up on washing out peanut butter jars because it's so hard to get the old peanut butter out to have it clean so you can recycle the plastic tub.
So you just
I threw it away.
Oh,
that's
man.
Dumb.
That's pretty bad.
I could do that. So everybody just, you know, clean out your peanut butter containers.
Clean. There you go.
Here's the thing. I don't know if this is available everywhere, but you can get a peanut butter container at Fred Meyer that is incredibly easy to clean out because it's just a tub shape. It's the shape of the peanut butter jar that makes it difficult.
Yeah.
Because you can't reach in there and get that little wide lip, the underlip area.
And you can refill tubs of peanut butter.
That's the thing. And you can get fresh ground peanut butter here in the Northwest at the Kroger Fred Meyer locations.
At your local Fred Meyer.
Yeah, or any other place that sells fresh ground peanut butter. You buy it in bulk by the pound or whatever. Or your local food co-op. That'd probably be even better. A more sustainable business choice. So anyways, make a change. Make it today. All right. This has been fun.
Yeah.
Let's close this out.
We'll put this baby to bed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I was also drinking RC Cola. And this RC Cola, I got it because it's Royal Crown Cola, which is, Canada's a Commonwealth. It was founded by Britain. So they still have some ties to the Royal Crown in Britain. And I figured it would also be somewhat appropriate.
I never quite figured out their relationship to the Crown or to England. I don't know.
They're fans.
Are they?
Most of them.
So like that whole like revolutionary like carryover that we have for whatever reason.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't apply over there.
Maybe like with the redcoats coming and stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, they still have the Queen on some of their currency, right?
Yeah, on all of their currency, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, most of it. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. So many questions about Canada for the next time we talk to our
friend. I need
friend,
to visit
Stephen,
again.
Such. Okay. The end. Oh, and let me get the new recently bolded outro. You got that?
Yeah, I got it.
All right. See how fast we can do this.
Right. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurt Bird for our headline sounder.
And Marcus Norman for our graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K. Shadowfoot,
Katrina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lean, Richard Wizinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Wise, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez,
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, John Blood,
Allison Wiley, Andy Brunner, Dave Knows,
Lars V, and Chris Smith.
Okay, go to bed, everybody. Oh, there it goes. Oh, they got a new ringtone. Everybody.
On the left.
Hands
no, on
up.
The right.
What?
Not just the ladies. And the guys.
That is hilarious. Because it was like just an old school ringtone forever.
Yeah. On the Skype, we are calling our guest on the Skype. We're wondering if he's gonna answer, wondering if he's at home, but he doesn't need to be at home unless he doesn't have a smartphone.
I like that it has the like a little underlying beat. It's got like a little, it's like a digital bass drum, like a Mario bass drum.
I wonder if this was all done on 8-bit.
No, it doesn't sound like 8-bit, but maybe 16.
Uh-oh, sustainable.
I'll try him again in a minute or two. I'm glad we captured that on mic. That was good.
This is episode 224C, the recording of us trying to get a hold of our guest.
Right, right. Oh, hey, that's him. I think, hello.
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable.
Liar. You're a liar.
We were just talking to them.
He was just here.
And you're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting. Did I get the name right?